Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Rooted Podcast. I'm your host, Cassandra, and I'm so grateful that you're here with me today. I'm doing something a little bit different. I've actually never done an episode like this before, but I decided to kind of let you guys lead the conversation. I put up a poll, or a question box rather, on Instagram and just asked you guys to drop your questions, and the turnout was amazing. There's about 30, so I don't think I'm gonna do all of them. What I thought I would do is maybe break these up and do one today and then maybe one in a couple of weeks. But moving forward, I thought it would be fun as just a way to check in and just kind of close the gap on any curiosities. As you guys all know, for those who've been listening for a long time, I'm an open book and not afraid to share. So I just really like this platform of the Q&A box and then relaying them back here on the podcast. So I guess let's just dive in. I didn't really categorize these at all, actually. So they're just going to be in the order of which they were received. So the first question was, how do you set boundaries with social media? This for me goes in waves. I think we can all relate to that. I think sometimes some seasons are more imperative than others to set certain boundaries. So for instance, like in the winter time when I know winter blues are really intense, I tend to set block hours to where I don't really look at my phone until like 10 a.m. And then I power down by 8 p.m. In the summer, for some reason, I feel less engaged with my phone in general, but for right now, like in my personal life, I'm in a season of really wanting to share what's on my mind, and then I'm kind of like peacing out. I think that has a lot to do with being pregnant. So like even when I was going through IVF, I didn't spend much time on social media. I set up really harsh boundaries because there was, you know, you get like influx of pregnancy announcements, and even other women going through IVF, that was like almost too close for me. I kept comparing myself, kept going down this like doom scroll rabbit hole. And so I think all I can say is that it is so different for everybody, but like, just, you really have to listen to your gut and what it is that you're needing in that season. And my point was that like, sometimes you're just not that fazed by social media. And I love seasons like that where I can scroll, really like love what people are creating and putting out there. And I feel unaffected. I can put my phone down and feel like still that light, authentic energy. So really just tune in with your body. And if you're in a season right now where you feel like you are doom scrolling and it's affecting your mental health, for me, I think the absolute best thing that you can do is to set those time blocks of like, I'm not going to check my phone first thing. I'm not going to check my phone in the evening. And the minute, like a self-awareness practice, a little game, the minute that you notice that you're doom scrolling and you're starting to feel sort of like, ugh, in your body, just jump off. Don't even think about it another second. Just like exit off the app, whatever app it is that you're on, and just go do something else. So that would be, that's how I set boundaries with social media. Kind of all over the place, I know, but that's also my piece of advice. Favorite place to shop for clothes. So thankfully I'm in a season of not shopping too much right now. My amazing mom just took me maternity clothes shopping, so I'm feeling really settled on like a pretty much like a pregnancy and postpartum capsule right now. But when I do shop, I really love H&M. I feel like their clothes just really fit me well. I try to shop the Conscious line. I'll be totally honest, I don't know how sustainable that really is. I haven't done a ton of research. I love to shop secondhand. Sometimes that's thrifting different boutiques and stuff when I go travel, but also even just my mom's closet and different friends' closets. Like when they're done with something, a lot of times I'm like, I will try that. Really love Nordstrom. There's a lot of brands that I like from Nordstrom. But that's pretty much about it. Those are like probably the three places that I frequent the most. The next question. Are you not working? This is a good one. Are you not working at RH, Restoration Hardware, anymore? Here's a story with Restoration Hardware. I actually got this question in like three different ways from three different people. So I got the job with Restoration Hardware, and my intention behind this job, aside from like obviously loving interior design and loving that company, I was in the depths of hell with IVF. I was so depressed, not doing great mentally, and after talking with Jonathan at length, it felt like I needed something like a job, a full-time job to distract me, because IVF had totally become my whole life. It was just the orbit that I existed around. And so this job fell into my lap, which was so lovely. And then just two weeks in, we found out that we were pregnant. And to be honest, I just did not. I know it sounds stupid because you guys are probably like, you're doing IVF. What do you mean that you were surprised? But I really was. I mean, when you've gone through it again and again and again and always coming up empty, you kind of get used to the no result. And so I was shocked, actually. And so I kind of coasted for a little bit. But then at this point, I was about 6.5 weeks. So I had been there almost 3 weeks, and I was so sick, like so sick, that it was really hard for me to stand up for long periods of time. It was really hard for me to not be eating almost constantly. I needed like carbs or nuts or something just to like, I don't know, have some sustenance, because my nausea was so bad. And then also I needed to be drinking water constantly. And there are some rules within Restoration Hardware, because for anyone who's never been there, you're on the floor a lot of the time. Even though I was on the design team and I wasn't really working with clients face to face, you are exposed in the whole store. Like the design area is like super open, all glass. And so I couldn't have like my Stanley water bottle. You can't have like a regular water bottle. It was like soda water, or you were having to go really far, like pretty far, to get like nice bottles of water. And that you could have, but it just like was not realistic. And also, in all fairness, this was my second pregnancy after losing our first. And so my anxiety was so bad, like so bad. Heart palpitations, sweaty palms. I couldn't really focus. So I gave it some thought. It wasn't something that I just like immediately was like, I can't do this. Jonathan and I talked at length. I talked about it in therapy. I talked about it with family. And ultimately it just came down to, I really had been through the ringer for the past year, physically and mentally. And ultimately, was this job going to help me to feel better, or was it ultimately going to make me feel worse? And basically just what I came down to is that I wanted an environment where I felt so safe and taken care of, and like I didn't have to compromise any of my physical or mental needs. Just like a really selfish era, you know, and I think that's really healthy. And again, it was a hard decision to make, especially the way that I got the job, because I knew the person who basically recruited me on an intimate level, and so I didn't want to burn any bridges there. But it was ultimately like the sweetest departure. She was so understanding, so understanding, and just so gracious. And it was such a short time working there, but I will hold such a special place in my heart for that company and the people that I met. They were all just so incredible and so lovely. So that is the story with that. Found out that I was pregnant, felt pretty surprising. I chose to take care of myself on an extreme level and just not continue with the role. That was long. Sorry. The next question is, about to start IVF and I'm terrified. Any advice? I feel you. For me, when we initially started IVF, I was so excited because I was like, oh, cat's in the bag. You know, like it felt like being able to take control over something that was out of our control, and we kept getting negative pregnancy tests. So obviously IVF is a bit unpredictable, even though it's incredible and there's so much science and so much success behind it. I think the advice that I have, and this is coming from a place of what I wish I could have like told my past self is to make space to feel it all. Like, it's okay that you feel terrified. This is a really big deal. You're putting your body and your, you know, emotions and your mental health in a very vulnerable place. All feelings are valid in this in this arena. You might feel terrified and excited and weepy all in one fell swoop, and like, that's great. That's amazing. That's so human. So leave room to feel everything that you need to feel. Do not overcommit to anything. I think a lot of us think that we can handle whatever is thrown at us, but IVF and the stims and the hormones and stuff that come along with it and all of the doctor's appointments, all of the information can be really overwhelming. So I would say that this is the time to treat yourself with like the utmost tender, loving care, and leave a lot of space in your schedule. And also, if you're doing this with a partner, I think something that kept Jonathan and I so close through an experience that can be stressful and daunting, again, because you emotionally are going through so much and you might not feel like yourself. I committed to just always trying to communicate as best as I could, even when it felt like nails on a chalkboard, like the last thing that I wanted to do. I would just say like, hey, I'm having a day today. I don't feel like myself today, or I'm feeling really weepy today. And this would just give him a heads up of like, cool, okay, I know that maybe my sarcastic jokes aren't probably the best thing for you right now, so I'm gonna like keep those at bay. Or, okay, you're feeling a little on edge today, so like maybe Jonathan would go, you know, run some errands by himself and give me like a good amount of free time and just sort of like let me come to him. So those would be my biggest pieces of advice. And just, yeah, be so gentle with yourself. This is such an amazing, exciting time, but it's a lot. And, you know, like, you hold the cards here. Just speak what you need and don't make apologies for it. Okay, what is your human design? Heard about HD from your pod. I'm loving it. So before I answer, I just have to say that I love how creative some people can get with abbreviating their questions, since you can only have so many characters. It's pretty impressive. So my human design, I am a self-projected projector. My profile is a 3-5. So for anyone who doesn't really know what that means, or people who might be familiar with human design, but they want to know exactly kind of what that looks like. So self-projected means that I integrate and work through problems best when I speak them aloud. I think I've said that here on the podcast, because it's funny to me that before I even knew what human design was, the podcast felt so healing for me. And that kind of is proof in the pudding, because the more that I talk aloud, the more that I really digest information and kind of like integrate my own life lessons and things that I'm learning. So this is a really sweet place for me to be able to do that. And also, that can get confusing sometimes, because I think when we hear self-projected or what that looks like, it looks like we need to ask for a lot of advice in order to feel like we have the answer to our problems. But actually, the opposite is true. It's more about being heard and just having our words land somewhere, either like this, where there's no like direct feedback, or with people that we trust who can just hold our information. So it's not so much about seeking advice. It's more about like really clearing our own throat chakra and letting our vibrations of our words hit the air. So that's the self-projected piece. Projector is one of the more rare human designs. It's less of the population. I think it's about like 30% or something. Might be less. I don't know. But basically that means that I don't have my own energy source. So basically I'm a sponge. You can kind of look at it as like an empath, but and it's very true. I mean, I can see this even from when I was little, like whomever I'm around and whatever their energy is, it's so easy for me to soak up and absorb that. So I do have to be really careful. Knowing my human design has helped so much with like mindful awareness and self-awareness, because it's easy for me now, not easy, but easier for me now to be like, oh, that's not mine. That's theirs. I'm gonna let that lie there. But that is also why I am generally when I'm like by myself or if I'm really clear, I'm very laid back. Don't make decisions easily. I'm just kind of like, whatever you want, because honestly, I'm like in a state of neutral. And so that's been really helpful to learn. Also, projectors are natural guides. So that sounds kind of pompous. I don't mean it to, but it's just a matter of it's easier for projectors to be able to hear a problem or an issue and be like, oh, I think I know how I would do that, or I think I can see how that would work, how this would work better if you did it this way. So we tend to be people who are good to come to for advice. And lastly, observers. So they say it's like a bird sitting in the tree, just kind of like overlooking everything, watching how the world is working. And again, in turn, we tend to come up with a lot of ideas of like, I see how I could make that a little bit more streamlined, or I see how I could save people headaches if I just like, you know, tweaked it this way. So that's kind of fun. The 3-5 profile is, I'll just summarize it really quick of those two things together. Basically, touching the fire to know it's hot and then sharing the experience. So could not be more accurate for my life. Okay, so the next question. So how did you and Jonathan meet? So Jonathan and I met, we should have met a long time ago, which is super weird, but we haven't, but we didn't. My childhood best friend is married to his childhood best friend. She's been one of my best friends since birth. Her mom took care of me when my parents worked for a little bit, until my mom stopped working. And then we just remained super, super close. We had some, you know, like life takes you in different directions. She went to a different school. We had different friends, but like she's always been like family to me. And I hadn't seen her for a while. And then she actually was diagnosed with cancer. And so it brought just a pool of her people together. And there was one night where I went over there to see her and just hang. And I guess Pat, so Jonathan had known who I was, and I guess his best friend, my best friend's husband, had told him that I was coming over that night. And so Jonathan came over, and that is how we met. But funny enough, we didn't say a word to each other. I thought he was super cute. His energy was amazing. He was like really witty, but like kind of quiet. And he at the time was kind of knee deep in doing like a lot of SEO work for his company. And I needed some done for my website. It was like something that I despised. I mean, SEO is just like the freaking worst thing in the world. So anyway, I reached out to my best friend after that and was like, hey, give him my phone number, because, or maybe I said like, give me his phone number. I'm going to reach out to him for help with my website. And so we got in touch. I think I actually maybe emailed him, and we met for a drink at the Union train station, downtown Chicago. Like Little Toasted, I think is what it was called. Totally didn't have any intention. I mean, he was like super cute, but I was fresh off the boat from like a horrible heartbreak. And he looked over my website. We had a couple beers, and then we just kind of stayed in touch from there. Yeah, I'm not going to get into like our whole dating journey, but that is essentially how we met. Next question, what kind of therapy are you doing right now? Still EMDR? So no, I actually ended up not sticking with my EMDR therapist. She was really lovely. I feel like it just felt like, I don't know, actually, I don't even know how to say that, because for anyone who's been through therapy, you know, it can be hard to try and articulate why like a certain therapist just didn't work out. This one just didn't. She wasn't for me at the time, but she was amazing and lovely. And we did a couple of sessions of EMDR, which I know works. My grandfather has been had been practicing it forever. And I've seen just how dramatic the results can be. I think it is so invasive in the best sense of the word. And so you really have to be in a mental state that can handle that. And I don't think that I was. I think I wanted to be, but I don't think that I was. So actually now I'm doing somatic therapy, which is basically body work mixed with talk therapy. So you're really observing your body as you're speaking, especially when you're talking about like trauma touch points in your life, and certain experiences that you've been through. It's really like tapping into where you feel that in your body. And then you do certain exercises and visualizations to release that tension in your body. It's been pretty incredible. I think that is a sweet spot for me with everything that I had gone through with IVF and our miscarriage and stuff like that. So, and with anxiety, it helps so much with anxiety. And I really love my therapist. I was doing it weekly for the first 3 months. And now I am switching to every other week. I think sometimes it can start to feel like you're having therapy too much. So the opposite can happen, at least for me. Like my last two appointments, they were great. And then I would like step away after our appointment and I would start to feel anxious, which is kind of frustrating. And so, I did some research on this and just like read up on what was happening. And, there is such a thing as just overdoing it and not letting yourself really live in the work and practice the work without working it to death, if that makes sense. Okay. Let's see. Feel like I'm constantly changing my mind with what I want to do in life. Any advice on how to center? That is such a beautiful question. I guess the first thing that came to my mind was, it's okay to change your mind. You're talking to somebody who has switched course so many times, starting in college with my major. And this was something that I used to shame myself for all the time. I used to think that it made me super flaky, indecisive, but I do believe that there are humans out there who are meant to experience different things. And if that me saying that resonates to you, like in your bones, then I say that you run with that and you just have fun putting your hands and your toes into things that feel aligned, things that make you come alive. I think you just have to be prepared that you might fail and that's okay. You might fail and be like, I'm going to keep going. You might fail and be like, that's not for me. All in all, that is a beautiful thing. That is just being a human being. I think if that doesn't align and you feel sort of like you are in a rut and you're lost, I think the best thing is to, and again, this depends on like how flexible you are. I don't know if you have another income where you have the luxury of being able to like try different things and not feel super stressed about it, or if like you are the sole provider and you are looking for a completely different, income and stream of revenue doing something else. Let's go ahead and say that you have some freedom and have some luxury. I think the best thing that you can do is to sit down and make a list of the things that bring you joy, even if it's like something as simple as like reading or writing or going on long walks, being around kids. Just kind of see where that list takes you. And then as you're going through that list, funnel the things that are similar and see what that feels like. Case in point, you might find that you would be a great teacher. And if you don't want to go through the hoops of like going back to school to teach, you could always become a substitute teacher or a teacher's aide or something like that. Even a nanny, becoming a nanny. That is like beautiful, beautiful, taxing, amazing, fun, playful work. So that would be my advice. That's kind of how I realized that when I was doing some freelance design, like really actually liked that and wanted to try it and pursue it, because I realized that a lot of my list was leading towards like redecorating my home, rearranging furniture, going to Home Goods and thrifting, changing out like things in our home, giving friends advice on their homes, organizing. So you catch my drift. Like things were just sort of like migrating to this one category. So start there and see what happens. How do you connect with yourself on off days? I love that. I go on walks, actually. I go on walks and sometimes they're silent. Sometimes I don't put my headphones in at all. And other times I will listen to a podcast, that is about something that I'm super, super interested in. So usually that is something that is like mindfulness based or whatever, because then I can kind of like just tap into my authenticity and feel like it just kind of feels like I'm in conversation with somebody who gets me, if that makes sense. Or also if I know what's eating at me and what's like kind of making me feel off, I find it helpful to find a podcast that talks about that direct problem or issue. Or recently I have been, and there's also a question here that says, how did you learn to meditate having a hard time getting into it? So I'm going to kind of push those two together. I have been doing the Superhuman app, and I had tried it a while back and I didn't love it for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe it just like wasn't the right phase for me, but I love it now so much. I'm still in my 2-week trial. I think it's up in like a few days, but I'm definitely going to stick with it. It's a little pricey. It's like $190 a year, but there is no limit of how many meditations there are. I love that they're all the founder, Mimi Bouchard. I love that they're all her voice. So you kind of know what you're going to get. And the music that she pairs with the meditations are stunning. And for me, that is something I love. I love music in general, but I also find it really powerful and really soothing. And so that has been something that has been really helpful for me to just ground and connect back to myself, whether I'm laying in the hammock and I listen to one, whether I do it first thing when I wake up, or like I said, if I go on a walk outside in nature, that's probably my best recipe, is one of those meditations and a long walk by myself. Where do you get most of your home decor inspired by your style? That is so nice. Thank you. So I don't know if this is going to be helpful. Most of my home decor is so hodgepodgey. I freaking love, not so much anymore. I was just telling my mom this morning that I feel very at peace within our house. I feel very content with the things that we have. I'm a serial rearranger. So if I'm feeling sort of like that need for change, I'll always start there first, kind of like shopping in our own house and like moving things around. But lately I just haven't had that itch. I'm in a very steady place of like, we truly don't need anything else. Even if I see something that's cool, I'm like, I don't even know where that would go. And so I just move on. But I have really good luck at Home Goods. And where else? I used to like Target's home decor section, but I'm just like not a huge fan anymore. I feel like it's gotten very kind of like country. So I don't really do that anymore. Lila Lifestyle, I'll link her in the show notes. Oof, so good. She's this one woman show who buys things wholesale and then sells them on her website. The price is right. The items are amazing. They're super unique. So I would definitely recommend that. And then sometimes it's just thrifting, you know, or like if I go out of town, like when I go see my sister in San Francisco, I love going to small shops and like different ceramic shops and places that sell little pieces of art and just picking up little trinkets like that. But for the most part, to be totally transparent, I would say Home Goods and Lila Lifestyle is like 90% of our home decor. Yeah. Tips for coping with morning sickness. I'll answer this. But again, I want to say every body is so different. And so that what I say might not work for you if this is the season that you're in. And if this is the season that you're in, I'm sorry. I feel you. For me, so much sleep. I'm going to say a couple of things that maybe aren't what you're expecting to hear, but, so much sleep and also just not giving a flying F-U-C-K about what others might think of how you're coping. So what I mean by that is I have a very big fear of being perceived as lazy or someone who doesn't care. So for instance, if Jonathan like would catch me napping or something, I would feel so guilty and be like, oh my God, he doesn't think that I'm pulling my weight, which isn't true. That is something that I'm still to this day working on in therapy because of past relationships and the gaslighting and whatever that they made me feel. So, Jonathan is not that way. He is like If you're tired, don't even set an alarm. Sleep as hard as you need to. Good for you. Your body's doing a lot. I mean, he's the best, but find a circle of people who can support you in that way. And you also kind of have to demand for that support. What you're doing is not small. It's like the biggest thing you could possibly do. And also just experiment. I knew that I needed to eat, and I would say experiment and release shame. So I knew that I needed to eat, but so much didn't sound good. What did sound good was like heavy carbs. So like bagels, toast with like a ton of peanut butter, and not like, I just didn't want like the healthy peanut butter. I wanted like Jiffy peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, pizza, pasta, like doused in red sauce. And those were the things that I could really tolerate, that and like some fruit. So I could have easily been like, this is so bad for the baby, or like, this isn't good for me, or I'm going to gain so much weight. No, just let that mental shit leave the room, sit with yourself. And if that is what you need to get by, that is what you need to be eating. So those would be my two biggest pieces of advice. The mental piece in the beginning of just like demanding what it is that you need, and then following through and finding a good support group of people who will honor that and who understand that. And then be the physical piece of just releasing all shame and leaning into what it is that your body actually needs and is craving. Your baby will be fine, I promise. Okay. Coming to terms that I need to declutter, but dreading it. Any tips? Yeah. I'm someone who doesn't ever dread decluttering because, and I'll say this because I think being on the other side and knowing what it feels like when you've done it is like, oof, it is the best feeling. It literally feels like you took off physical weight from your body. So I would say if you are someone who's dreading it, that it just means that you need to start small and just have a system in place. And so let's just say, it's so easy for us to like look at our house and be like, oh my God, our house is so overwhelming. We need to declutter everything. What I actually do is I have in my phone certain areas in my house of things that I want to declutter, especially like before the baby comes. There are still some things that like I know that we need to downsize, or that we can downsize to make more vacant space. So I have a list in my reminders app where it just says decluttering. And then I have like the little sections listed below. And as I do it, when I feel like getting to it, then I can just like, boop, check that off and know that that room or that area is done. So start small and start with the space that probably overwhelms you the most. And if it's something like your unfinished basement, which Jonathan and I tackled not that long ago, so oof, I feel you if that's what it is. But that doesn't mean you have to like commit your whole weekend to doing this whole basement. Piecemeal it. Start with certain areas of your basement or a category of your basement. If you have like a bunch of gift wrap and all of that stuff for like the holidays, holiday decor is a really good one. Start with that, piecemeal that. And I would also recommend not going out to the store and buying like a bunch of storage bins and stuff like that to prep yourself. First, go through your trash, donate, keep pile. Make those three piles, and then you can assess what it is that you need. Because a lot of times, like going out and spending money on all these storage containers ends up just bringing more clutter in and can kind of just like mess with your mind and be like, oh, I have all these storage containers now. I can keep everything and just put them in these bins. No, that's not decluttering. That's just organizing all of your clutter. So that would be my advice for there. Do you have a big life goal? Yeah, I do. And sorry if this is cringe, but it's to, actually, I have two. The first is to be a mother. That's been a goal of mine for so long. To be a mother, but to also be a part of a really lovely, authentic, nourishing, healthy family unit. That I think is like my ultimate definition of success. I know that's different for everybody, but that is where I feel most of my purpose lies, and where I feel like I will thrive the most. So I'm really excited to watch that unfold and see if that is in fact true. I think it will be. Second goal has always been to be a published author. And as of tomorrow, you guys, Yes, as of tomorrow, that will be a reality. Kind of makes me want to cry saying that out loud. I was telling my mom today, I'm like, I cannot believe that something I've talked about for over a decade is coming to fruition because I made it so. I did a lot of self-sabotaging for so long around this, and so it feels really cool and really surreal and really, really magical to know that come tomorrow, I can check that goal off of my list. So that feels really good. It's for those who might not be familiar, I've talked about it a little bit on Instagram. I haven't shared a ton, not very good at marketing, but it's called Tender, and it's a collection of short essays and poems for the healing. It's going to be available on Amazon, and it's basically a compilation of so many life lessons and vulnerable like journal entries that I've written to myself, some that I've shared, little poems that I've written, and it just revolves around the human experience and grief and relationships and simplicity and change. I don't know. It's heavy and it's deep, but it's also light and tangible, and adaptable. And so I really hope that if you get your hands on it, that it resonates with you. So I'm not going to talk your ear off about that, but that is a big life goal that is soon to be realized. And I'm very, very, very proud of myself for it. Another question is, do you have any advice for starting a podcast? Sharing what didn't work out in the beginning. To be honest, I don't really have any advice. I think it's you just start, because the thing is that like your beginning episodes are probably always going to make you a little cringe as you keep going. Mine do. Like my voice, oh my gosh. Like how you're hearing me now is just my voice, because I've gotten so comfortable with showing up to the mic and just, you know, letting it fly. But in the beginning, I think you, and rightfully so, you're overanalyzing everything. And so you want to make sure that your voice is like soothing and it feels airy and whatever. And so I was just overthinking it completely. And so I listened back on those episodes and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never sounded like that in my life. Like that's not my pitch. So really just like trying to go in with the self-awareness to be yourself and to really lean into that and let that be good enough, because it is. Also, I would say drop any belief that you need to have this like specific niche. That's sort of what I've grown to love about Rooted, about this podcast, is, you know, there's an umbrella for sure, like mindfulness, self-awareness, some grief, relationships, just like truth serum, right? Talking about what the human experience is like. But within that umbrella, I'm free to dance around, to move around, do Q&As like this, and just talk about things that are like relevant in my life right now and lessons that I'm learning in my life right now. And so I would say, I think what can make podcasts not be able to go the distance sometimes is because the topics become too niche, and then you're like, shit, what else do I talk about? Or like, I already covered that. I'm running out of things. And so kind of releasing that pressure from yourself of having to like stick to this one specific category, I think, in my opinion, can lessen that pressure and leave room for a lot of growth, a lot of shifting. So that would be a piece of advice. And then lastly, I would say this might be an unpopular opinion, I don't know, but I would say don't pay attention to your analytics. Be smart about like making sure that your podcast is hitting all of the avenues, you know, and stuff like that. But and that you're using a good hosting platform. I use Anchor, which is now Spotify, if that is helpful for you to hear that. But otherwise, don't pay attention to the analytics, because if I did, let me tell you something, I wouldn't be doing this still. I don't get paid to do this. I don't do ads anymore. That might change one day. I don't know. But as of the past, like, I don't know how many years, I haven't done ads. So if I were to be paying such close attention to my analytics, I probably would stop, because no human being wants to see that only X amount of people are listening. And this is the messed up part, is that as human beings, we're wired to think that's not enough, right? So something that's helpful for me is if for some reason you do see that you have like 300 followers or something. And in your brain, you're like, that's nobody. First of all, the best piece of advice that I ever got was to close your eyes and visualize you recording your podcast in a room with those 300 people watching and listening to you. Now it feels like a lot of people. So I really like that trick. I think that's really kind of a cool way to flip it on its head. And also just like, don't disregard those 300 people. I know that we don't do that to be malicious. We're not saying like those 300 people don't matter and that we don't care. I know that ultimately we just want to reach as many people as possible. And that is the intention behind that thought. But the people who are choosing to show up and the people who do follow, those people might really need to hear what it is that you're putting out. And that's not nothing. Even if it's not 300, even if it's 30, that's 30 people. That's a crowded room of people. And so I don't know, I guess I would just say to not set out trying to reach all the masses. There's so many podcasts out right now. And I know it's hard to see like 1 million downloads and you're like, ooh, I have a fourth of that, if that. If you're going into it for those reasons, maybe revisit if this is exactly what you want to do. I think podcasts are, they're oversaturated for sure, but that's not a bad thing. I think we are all so specific in who speaks to our souls, who speaks to us in a way that we can resonate with, who we feel like we can really relate with, who talks about the things that we really feel like we need to hear, people we're genuinely interested in. And so don't lose heart, don't lose faith in the fact that there's a bajillion podcasts out there right now. I think everybody, I really do believe that everybody needs to hear what you have to say. You're your own unique person with your own unique viewpoint and ways of doing things. And so stay in your lane, don't quit, don't get too niche, and just have fun with it. Okay, a couple more. Your favorite workout right now? That's hard with pregnancy because it goes up and down all the time. I would say probably without question, walking and swimming laps. I signed back up for Cara Duvall Pilates with her platform range, which I am obsessed with her. I think as a person, she's so amazing and her work is really, really great. But for some reason within this pregnancy, that is not really how my body wants to move. I either want to be like walking semi-fast, or I want to be submerged in water. And so I think that was, that's kind of an example of me trying to like fit a square into a circle and be like all the other pregnant people that I've heard of who like do Pilates and do bar. It's something that I tried and my body's just like, no, that's not really what we want. We'd rather do some cardio several days a week and then stretch and be good with it. So I answer that question with the sidebar of, if you're asking and you might be pregnant too, or if you're listening and you might be pregnant, please do what works for you. Don't follow the masses. And even if you aren't, actually scratch that. Even if you aren't pregnant, that is my favorite workout. But like, find what works for you. I wish that, I'm going on a tangent. I wish this for myself and I wish this for all of us as a society. There is like a difference between a comment or like an intrigue, right? I totally get that. I am so curious by nature. Get me on someone's morning routine and I want to talk their ear off about everything that they're using on their skin, like what they do when they wake up in the morning, how they make their coffee. I'm nosy by nature as well. So there's no harm in asking these types of questions, but I know for me, and maybe again, it's that like projector energy, I get so invested in like hearing what works for somebody. And then my default, I wonder if you can relate to this. My default is, ooh, I should try that. And especially if I like really admire the person, I'm like, ooh, maybe if I try that, I'll gain X, Y, or Z. Thank God I've done enough self-work where generally I can catch myself and be like, come on, no, you're good as you are. Like, you don't actually need that. It just sounds lovely and intriguing. And sometimes it's like those fresh ideas are great. Sometimes that's what we need to hear. Like, ooh, putting some salt in my coffee, like, yum, that sounds freaking delicious. I'm going to try it. But I didn't do it thinking, ooh, if I put salt in my coffee, I'm going to start exuding a life that's more like hers. You know what I'm saying? Like, the human brain is so weird, the directions that it can take us. And so I guess, like, with any of these questions that I'm answering, I just want to, like, put that out there for anyone who might be sinking really deep into the answers I'm giving, of just, like, see if you can catch yourself noticing where you might be, like, falling into that trap. It's just that comparison trap that we all do so much. Okay, a few more. Are you still doing photography? Yes. So I'm in my 13th year of doing this full time. That is, a lot of people actually asked, and I didn't write it down, but a lot of people did ask. I'm not against talking about money, I don't care. But they were like, do you work? Or a version of, like, how do you make money? So that has always been my mainstream of income. I just don't share about it a lot anymore. It's become more of, like, a personal thing. I don't even know how to explain that. It just is. It's not, it feels kind of sacred. Like, it's not something that I feel like I really want to, like, push out on the internet. I will sometimes if there's, like, a shoot that I did that, like, I'm so proud of, or if I have an announcement to make, I'll pair it with a photo that I've taken recently. But it's just become this really beautiful, sacred art that I do that just happens to make me money. So Jonathan brings in majority of our money, but that is something that I still do. Photography is also very seasonal, as most of you know. So my busy season is coming up, but it's going to be cut short. I basically started actually last week and will be full swing until August, beginning of August, and then I'm stopping because shooting in heat does not sound fun to me when you're 8 months pregnant. And then also I would say that for photography, I started to cut back a lot. And so I don't really take new clients anymore unless it's something like an interior designer needs a project shot or something like that, or like someone is shooting a cookbook or creating a cookbook and needs some food photography, things like that I will do. But as far as, like, the family and portrait work that I'm doing, most of my clients are repeat clients at this point, which is really special. It's like this little reunion every single time I see them. So just kind of found my sweet spot. I don't know what will happen after our baby is born. My sole focus is just to be on her and writing and creating in that way, and not doing anything too labor intensive for the foreseeable future. But that's the beautiful thing about having an art form as a job, is, you know, you can always revisit it. So, okay. Two more questions I'm going to answer. Oh, there's so many good ones. But I did say that I'm going to break these up and do two. Ugh, jeez, so many good ones. Okay, I'm going to say, this is one. So I've actually spoken with this person a little bit over DMs, and so I do want to answer this one. She said, the real experience of what being pregnant is like, body hormones changes. And she had followed up by saying, like, essentially, it's just not talked about that much. And I respect that. I would agree. But in the same breath, also, I've said this 1,000 times, I feel like, already, but every person and every experience is so different. So what I say, the person to my left might be like, nuh-uh, not for me. So you can take what I'm going to say as a grain of salt. And I'm also going to, I want to stick with some answers that I feel like are kind of universal, but just, again, aren't really talked about. So the experience of being pregnant, outside of, like, the morning sickness and all of that, I think for me, I would say it's more surreal than what I've heard, or, like, what people seem to, like, vocally lead on about. Does that make sense? Especially when you start to feel the baby move and you're just, like, out doing your thing during the day, or you're, like, out at dinner, and then they just start moving and you're just like, oh my God, there's a life inside of me. Like, there's a life inside of me. And then I think it just kind of, like, takes you down this, like, path of, like, holy shit, this is real. Not that you, like, forget, especially when you're showing and the baby is moving, like, it's obvious that you're pregnant and you're tired. But I think the surrealness of it all is not talked about a lot. It's a very, very, very cool bizarre, eye-opening experience that is like all-consuming. As far as the hormones, I actually haven't had, that is one thing actually. I thought that I was going to be like a hot mess because I was an IVF. I felt like I would cry a lot with IVF. I was like, but also, you know, to give myself some grace, it was like, we had a very hard experience and it was like a year long. And, so I feel like I had the right to be angry and like on edge and crying. But like, you know, when you're like, I probably don't have a reason to be sobbing right now. I thought pregnancy would be more like that. And I mean, I'm in my 6th month now. And so I would say that's kind of surprising that I haven't really had any of that. If anything, I get more of like the uncontrollable laughter, which is like, can be really embarrassing because it's happened in public and it's happened with people who like, I don't know very well. And I just start laughing until I'm crying. Physically, I think something that's so wild, I'll say two things. One is very humbling and embarrassing, but I don't care. I'll share it. So for some women, so like when I sneeze or if like I cough or something, you like pee your pants a little bit. What the hell? Nobody told me that. Like they talk about it after birth, but like, yeah. And it's because everything is like relaxing and getting, you know, ready for baby. Oh my God. It's happened like 3 times to me in Target where I've texted my mom and I'm like, oh my God, it just happened again. Like what the hell? So that's something that no one really told me. And then also just the way that things are shifting in your belly area. So like when you are newly pregnant, you don't feel much of anything physically. And then all of a sudden you start to feel, for me, it was like I was so aware of all of your organs start being pushed up because your uterus is getting bigger. That feeling is weird. And there was like an area for me where it hit, where like sitting down was so uncomfortable. Again, I was like so in my head about being like, oh my God, all of my organs are moving. This is so weird. So like that was really bizarre. And then now I think it's more, I'm like in a very comfortable spot now. Like my belly doesn't make me uncomfortable. It's hard. It's big. It's like taking shape. But something else too is that like I think women expect that they're always going to get that like dark line down the middle. And if I was going to get that, I'm pretty sure I'd have that by now. And I don't. And I was like, is that bad? Like, am I supposed to be getting that? No, you're not. So I think physically too, I just want to say like, again, everybody is so different. And so there are things that I went into being like, oh, I'm waiting for that. Where is it? And it wasn't happening. Normal. All is normal. You're probably totally fine. And then one other thing I will say is some anxiety. I never really had, aside from a couple of friends who had miscarried, speak about anxiety. And I'm actually not even talking about pregnancy after miscarriage anxiety. I'm not even going to get into that. I feel like that could be its own episode, but I feel like I don't really need to talk about that. I mean more just like anxiety from like the surge of hormones, and the things changing in your body, how rapid speed they're changing. For me, I've had some like pretty light anxiety. And so that's why I'm bringing this up. But I've had like one really bad anxiety attack that happened only just a couple of weeks ago, not even. And it was because something, which sounds kind of silly, but because the amount of blood that you're pumping, like you're doubling the volume of blood that you're pumping through your body. And I was resting and all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I can feel. It almost like felt like I could feel the amount of extra blood that was pumping through my body. It's like my body, my fingertips were pulsating. I could feel it like in my ears, in my throat. I could hear it. I could actually see like you can feel your heartbeat in your belly so prominently during pregnancy, at least I can. And so I could like see my belly moving with my heartbeat. I was just so hyper aware of like everything that was going on in my body, and it sent me into an anxiety attack. Like I could not regulate my nervous system. What ultimately ended up helping me was I just made some tea, and Jonathan and I went to bed super early, and I just made him spoon me, and just took like 4 deep breaths and finally popped like 1/3 of a Unisom and went to bed and woke up the next morning and felt a lot better. Maybe not like 100%, but a lot better. And so I think people, I don't want to say people like the masses, but like a lot of people just don't really talk about how wild all of the changes are and how much they're all happening at once. And so it's totally normal if those things feel overwhelming or if you're unfamiliar, you're like, what is that? I'm really grateful to have my sister as a home birth midwife, and I'm friends with my nurse midwife here who we'll be using for birth. And I have a couple of really good friends who are just so open about their journeys with motherhood. And so just having that community of people that you really feel like you can rely on, who aren't sharing just like their advice, but they're sharing like hardcore experiences or, you know, scientific data backing up sort of like the things that you need to hear. So that's been really helpful for me. That was a really long answer and I'm sorry, but I feel like that question kind of deserves that radical honesty, and I didn't want to like sugarcoat it or make it something trite, because it's not. It was a good question. Thank you for asking it. Okay, so the last question that I'm going to ask is, what are you reading right now? Okay, so I love this question. I'm almost done with the book and I'm actually sad that I'm almost done with it. But funny enough, so when I started photography, this person was also beginning their photography journey. So I kind of feel like our experiences starting our business were sort of like side by side in tandem. She's incredible. You guys all probably know her, Jenna Kutcher. So she's a fellow Midwestern gal as well. And she wrote a book called How Are You Really? And it's so good. If you follow her on Instagram or if you have like, you know, been trailing her for a while, you know that she is just a very authentic human being. She's really funny. She definitely has like a way with words and just integrating real life experiences. So when I heard that she wrote a book, I had it on like the back burner forever to read. And then it finally became available via my Kindle with the Libby app. And so I dove headfirst into it. And she writes just like she talks. It feels like you're sitting down for coffee with a girlfriend. Again, I'm really sad to be almost done with it. It's been really, really helpful and eye-opening for me. I feel like our paths have been somewhat similar with things that she's struggled with and things that she's coping with, and just sort of how she wants to show up in the world. And so I'm feeling really inspired after reading it. And I can't recommend it enough. I took a big break from reading for a while, so it felt good to get back into that. Before I read that, I reread Soulful Simplicity by Courtney Carver, which is honestly probably like my reset book. I probably read it 1 to 2 times a year when I need that like really gentle coming home to myself, that reminder that like less truly is more, a reminder of coming home to my values and maybe like even revisiting what those are. So yeah, I just want to throw that in there too, because if you've never read it, it's a really, really sweet, powerful book that I've gifted to many people in my life and can't recommend enough. Okay, I feel like that was good. So let's cap it off there. Thank you all so much for the questions. Sometimes when I've done like question boxes or whatever, it's crickets and that's fine. I'm just like, oh, okay, nobody has any, or like maybe I'm not meant to do something like this right now. So it felt really special to get these really amazing questions. Thank you for, you know, just making them potent and real and opening up space for me to be able to share vulnerably and hopefully give air to things that people need to hear about. I don't know. That's always my goal. That's how I want to show up in this space. So thank you so much for your effort and your part in this episode. And I will see you back here next week.